If you've listened to the show for any length of time, you know that I'm a big fan of connecting with locals when you're traveling someplace. If you're just going to be inside the tour bus, then you might as well stay home. The best parts of travel for me are when you get out into the marketplace or into the cafe where you meet the locals and have a chance to interact. If you're also looking to experience this, then check out Explore Worldwide, whose local tour leaders will get you off the beaten track and into the heart of the adventure, helping you get past being a tourist, experiencing local culture, and finding places you would not find by yourself. And isn't that what travel is all about? If you're thinking about your next adventure, head to exploreworldwide.com to find out more.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 761. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about museums and rock and roll, G-Men and Superman, the Polish Boy and Chef Boyardee as we go to Cleveland, Ohio. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Let's talk about Cleveland. I'd like to welcome the show Daniel Carciopolo from Cleveland, who has come to talk to us about Cleveland, Ohio. Daniel, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Chris.
We've covered Cleveland years ago as part of an episode about Northern Ohio. I think, Daniel, you weren't pleased that all we talked about was roller coasters. I think we talked a little more than that, but you think there's more to do in Cleveland than we covered, and it has been a while.
Yeah, I think your audience is looking for enriching experiences, and I think that several of them are overlooked, and I'd like to kind of walk through some of those missed opportunities.
Sounds great. Well, let's start with what's your connection with Cleveland?
Yeah, born and raised here. I currently live in a community adjacent to the city called Shaker Heights, but have spent a lot of time here, travel for work. So I'm all over the country in a non-pandemic year. So I see a lot of the world. It's always good to be home. And there's a lot to talk about the Northeast Ohio area, specifically Cleveland, and hoping to bring your audience some good content today. So.
Excellent. Well, why should someone consider going to Cleveland, Ohio?
Yeah. So I think a lot of people associate Cleveland with probably five decades of jokes, mistake by the lake. And I'm kind of here to tell your audience that it's an often overlooked city. It has a rich history of excellence that still exists today. It's a delicious city. It's an enriching city, and it's a unique city. It has its own personality and identity. And if you're looking for a different experience, it's a good visit.
I think that is true for so many American cities. We've done other episodes on, especially the industrial cities of the Midwest or whatever. And I think what was true about them when I was in high school or so, back in the late Cretaceous period, is not what is true about them today. I think there has been revitalization in most of the cities in the U.S. So what kind of itinerary are you going to recommend for us?
Yeah, I think you could get a really good sense of Cleveland in probably 4 days, a long weekend. But if you're looking for an extended stay, there's definitely day trips. So I'll take you through the itinerary, starting with the city proper, and then we'll get in towards the end at some of the things that your audience could do that's probably within an hour or two of the city. So assuming you fly into Cleveland Hopkins International Airport, I would say your guests should probably stay downtown. It's the hub of most of the activity for the city. Even if you're not venturing out into some of the neighborhoods and areas, there's things to do right outside your hotel. So if you're a budget traveler and you're not renting a car, or Ubering all over the place, there is a train directly from Cleveland Hopkins that'll take you to downtown Cleveland. It's the Red Line, and you can get off downtown at Tower City. I would recommend staying at probably the Kimpton Schofield Hotel or the New Hilton, probably offers the best views of Lake Erie and the surrounding city. To that point, if you are a budget traveler, the Ohio City Hostel offers really cheap rates for those who are used to hostel traveling and lodging. So, and you can do the city without a car. There's adequate public transportation via bus or rail. There's also obviously Uber transport. I would say the first day, if you do get in to downtown, you could probably enjoy downtown with the rest of your travel day. We're going to take you out to some of the neighborhoods, as I mentioned, but all of your theater, your sports, if your audience is into gambling, there's a casino downtown. You could probably just walk around and get into some of those activities without dedicating an entire day to downtown, in my opinion.
Okay.
Any questions, follow-up questions so far, Chris?
Well, you say downtown, and you're not highlighting any particular highlights for downtown yet.
Yep. So yeah, let's get into that. So your previous guest in Northeast Ohio had mentioned the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Sure.
We'll get into that later with the things not to do, in my opinion. But if you are
okay,
a big music fan and you tie part of your identity to certain rock stars and musicians from the past, absolutely go there and visit. I think there are better experiences. But if you do go down to the lakefront, you will see the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It's an I.M. Pei designed building. It's a unique building, and there's great exhibits there. I don't want to overlook that, but it's the tourist trap of the city. And adjacent to that is a science center. I think your previous guest brought that up as well. For the folks that enjoy history, there is a ship down in the North Coast Harbor called the USS Cod. It is docked there. It was a big World War II ship. It had 7 patrols in the South Pacific and did a lot of work to help win that war. So you could probably knock off the lakefront in a half of a day.
And when you say a ship, the USS Cod looks like it is a submarine.
Yes.
Okay.
It's a submarine. It did, I think, as a 7 patrols in the South Pacific during World War II.
Got it.
Was a big vessel for defeating the Axis countries. I would say those who enjoy theater, definitely if you are in, and we are open back up again with the pandemic, if you're in town in the evening, there's always theater and arts taking place at Playhouse Square. Playhouse Square is where you find the largest outdoor chandelier in the world.
Okay.
I know that's a very unique and weird thing, but it is a thing, and it's kind of neat to take a picture at, and it's a big Instagram photo place. So it is deemed the second largest theater district in the United States behind New York City. I think that's something that the city of Detroit and Cleveland often argue about, but I've been up to the Ford Theater in Detroit, and I will vouch for the Playhouse Square district here in Cleveland, Ohio. You can see anything from off-Broadway shows to abstract performances to local theater at the Playhouse Square district. If you are into athletics, there's professional sports here in Cleveland as well. We'll call it the Cleveland baseball team. Cleveland Cavaliers.
Do they officially not have a name yet? They're still the Indians, right?
They are the Indians.
Okay.
This will be their last year as the Indians.
Okay.
And I won't miss the name. So I'm a big baseball fan, but I'm okay with transition. But they're in town, and it's all walkable from your lodging. Even if you stay at a hostel or a bed and breakfast in Ohio City, you can get there by walking. The Terminal Tower, it's one of our staple buildings in the Cleveland skyline. At one point, until 1964, was the second tallest building in the world behind the Empire State Building. It's a great building for folks who love architecture. It is above the Tower City Center, where the hub where all of the trains come in and out of.
Mm-hmm.
I would also encourage your guests, especially if they appreciate restoration, to visit Heinen's downtown. Now, Heinen's is a grocery store, and I know you're saying, why would you visit a grocery store? It is a repurposed use of George Brown Post's trust building on the corner of East 9th and Euclid Avenue. It is a stunning building. It has a dome in the interior that, again, you could probably sit there on the balcony and have wine or beer and just kind of take it in. George Brown Post designed and was the architect for the New York Stock Exchange. So really neat experience just to wander in and get some food for yourself or even just having a happy hour drink at the Heinen's downtown. Very unique.
You know, the funny thing is, this reminds me of, for those of you who have been to Paris, there's one of the department stores in Paris that has this sort of, oh, I want to say temple of commerce sort of look. And this is like that. It's just gorgeous.
Yeah, it's definitely a different place to grab a gallon of milk, say that much. So, all right, so let's assume that you've kept yourself busy downtown for the first day, and maybe you've traveled and gotten into your hotel and settled. The second day I would dedicate to the eastern neighborhoods of Cleveland, Ohio. So I would take the Red Line. Again, you were on that train coming from the airport. If you go back to it, you could connect over to the Little Italy neighborhood of Cleveland. Little Italy is, I know a lot of people think of the Little Italy in New York, San Francisco. It is an old, dense, fun neighborhood to be in here in Cleveland. It has its own transit stop, so you could get out and go walk, grab yourself some coffee, grab yourself a pastry, and just take in some of the housing and the restaurants and the smells of Little Italy. There's plenty to do there. If you're here in August, there's the Feast of the Assumption, which is a tremendous annual event in Little Italy. It runs about 4 or 5 days. And then the first Italian restaurant in all of Ohio is Guarino's, which is a really good Italian restaurant from 1898. And that is still in service and providing customers delicious meals in Little Italy. Some of your guests will probably know who Chef Boyardee is.
Yes. Some of our younger guests have no idea who we're talking about.
He is actually a real chef, and he lived and operated out of Little Italy, Cleveland. And yeah, he had a restaurant, and a lot of the industrial barons loved his sauce so much that they invested in him to can and sell it nationally. And of course, it devolved into
something vaguely like Italian food. Yeah,
exactly. SpaghettiOs. But there is some recognition for Chef Ettore Boyardee, spelled differently. And then I would recommend for that coffee or pastry to go to Presti's. As you noticed, my last name is Carciopolo. My grandfather's first job as an immigrant in 1952 was at Presti's Bakery, kind of like your, for those who know Boston, Mike's Pastry up there, just a lot of good, delicious desserts and coffee. Once you do grab that coffee, pastry, whatever you want, and you're walking around.
Is there a particular pastry that they're known for, since you have the connection there? Is this the place that I go for the cannoli or?
Absolutely.
Okay.
The cannoli is probably their staple dessert, along with their tri-colored cookie. And they also dabble with eclairs and other non-Italian desserts that are very good. But for all intents and purposes, the cannoli is their staple dessert.
Okay. You know, there's some controversy about the cannoli. Like, if you find the cannoli in the shop window and it's pre-filled, it's not fresh.
Exactly.
So, I don't know where you fall on that side of the controversy there, but
I would agree with that. On their high volume days, you might find some pre-filled, but their standard practice is an empty shell and fill it up. So
okay, all right. So they're serious. That's what I need to know. Okay,
exactly. I would then encourage your guests to walk up to the Lakeview Cemetery, which is directly adjacent to Little Italy. It's a great walk. It's beautiful. There's a high stone wall as you walk up Mayfield Hill. And Lakeview Cemetery is not a creepy place. It is actually a beautiful park. There are monuments to many notable figures, not only in Cleveland history, but United States history. President Garfield is buried there. He has a very ornate monument that has an exterior and also an interior that you could visit. It's got a mosaic dome, stained glass. And it's a neat experience to go inside and acknowledge what he did for our country. The Wade Chapel is another monument. This was designed by the Tiffany and Company founders. Yep, it's on the national list of historic places. Another beautiful building within the cemetery. And then you get into some of the standard names that you may or may not know, but John D. Rockefeller, who is the Jeff Bezos of 100 years ago, industrial baron. He made his fortune here.
Standard Oil.
Standard Oil. He's buried there. Harvey Pekar, for those that are into some of his stories. Elliot Ness, who obviously took down Al Capone. And there's also many politicians, athletes, and notable figures. But it's a pleasant walk, definitely worth an hour of your day. If you're coming in March through May, I would encourage those who visit Lakeview Cemetery to visit Daffodil Hill. It is a hill that faces downtown and Lake Erie. There's about 100,000 daffodils, and it's a great place to sit and enjoy that cup of coffee. It's just a yellow blanket of a hill, plenty of seating, and it's just a really pleasant experience.
Well, and you say for those who come in that time of year, when is the best time of year, in your opinion, to come to Cleveland?
March is not necessarily the primary month to be here. My favorite time to be in Ohio is definitely the months of September or October. I think fall in Northeast Ohio is beautiful. Mm-hmm. The leaves change. It's a very leafy and forest-like city. So you get those colors. Obviously, if you come then, you miss a lot of the bloom with Daffodil Hill. So I would say May is probably the best month if you want to enjoy Daffodil Hill.
Okay.
While you're on the east side, University Circle is a phenomenal cultural hub for the city of Cleveland. So we have the Cleveland Museum of Art. It's the fourth wealthiest art museum in the United States. It's free to the public, save the exhibits, the special exhibits. So a couple years ago, we had Yayoi Kusama come in. That's the type of exhibit that would charge you. We have Van Gogh's Immersive coming here in a couple months. But all of the standard exhibits at the Cleveland Museum of Art are free, and it's worth the visit. It's been recently renovated within the last 10 years to include a stunning atrium, and it's just a very nice place to go and spend a half of a day.
Okay.
In the Cleveland Museum of Art, they have Monet, Renoir, Van Gogh, Gauguin. I could go on. So there's a lot of prestigious artists' work, and they do a very good job of making the guests feel welcome, and I certainly beam with pride when I'm in the Cleveland Museum of Art. Adjacent to the Cleveland Museum of Art is the Cleveland Botanical Garden. So this is not free, but it is a pleasant experience. If you like nature, if you like flowers, flora, it is a good visit. You definitely could spend an hour there, literally right across the street from the Cleveland Museum of Art.
Okay.
For those looking for a good meal to break up all of this walking and enjoying of museums and gardens, L'Albatros is a French restaurant in University Circle.
Butcher Box is sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler, and I just got my first Butcher Box. I've got packed with dry ice came 4 packets of ground beef, 3 packets of chicken breasts, 2 steaks, some pork ribs, and some sirloin tips. Now, I've got a great recipe for what to do with the chicken. At least one of those packets of chicken is going to become Greek chicken and rice. And if you go to chris2x.com, I've got a recipe there that's an Instant Pot recipe. But I'm not good with steak, and so I'm going to take advantage of the fact that ButcherBox has recipes on their site at butcherbox.com to learn some great recipes to do with those steaks. You can have ButcherBox deliver meat to your doorstep. Free shipping as always, curated to custom box plans. You can easily find high-quality meat and seafood you can trust. 100% grass beef, free-range organic chicken, pork-raised crate-free, and wild-caught seafood. Humanely raised, no antibiotics or added hormones. I also like the fact that I could recycle all the box and shipping material that they sent. Sign up at butcherbox.com/traveler and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional 20% off. Choose salmon, chicken, breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/traveler. If you got recipes for ribs or steaks, send them my way as I send my thanks to ButcherBox.com for sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler.
Butts right up against the Case Western Reserve campus, classic French cuisine from a French-trained chef, Zach Bruel. So a very good meal there. You can't miss lunch or dinner, L'Albatros. Also in University Circle is the Cleveland Museum of Natural History. For those who are traveling with kids, this is where you're going to get your exhibits with dinosaurs, and there's actually a live
dinosaur.
Yeah, there's dinosaurs.
Got my hopes up there.
Gotcha. There's a walkway, an elevated walkway with some live animals, and it's very interactive for younger children and families. So it's a good visit, and that is also right across the street from the Cleveland Museum of Art. So you can certainly spend a lot of time right there on Wade Oval. For those more into contemporary art, the Museum of Contemporary Art is also located in University Circle. It's called the MOCA, M-O-C-A. More abstract and modern pieces, but if that is your jam, certainly worth the visit.
It does not sound like it is yours.
Yeah. I'm more of a Cleveland Museum of Art
fan. Got it. Okay.
Yep, yep. For those who are into music, the Cleveland Orchestra's home is in University Circle at Severance Hall, another beautiful building. Cleveland Orchestra is a original member of the Big Five, which includes Boston, New York, Philadelphia, and Chicago. And they're phenomenal. And they're consistently rated in the top 10 of orchestras worldwide. They typically run in fall in University Circle and spring. And then in the summer, they play at the Blossom Music Center, which is in Cuyahoga Valley National Park. I think this, and they typically take a European tour and have some residency in the winter in Miami, which is very smart of them. But they, I think because of the pandemic and we lost a year and a half, they're going to be starting up again here in the fall. And they'll be at Severance Hall for a longer stretch, if I'm not mistaken. So, and it's not only orchestra, but orchestra excellence is your interest. Would certainly recommend going to Severance Hall and visiting the Cleveland Orchestra. For those who are into architecture, Case Western has a Frank Gehry building, designed building right on campus. You actually will see it from the air if you fly in. It, to me, it looks like tin foil crumbled up, but it is unique and it's a cool picture. I just wanted to call that out. That's all right in the same vicinity.
Okay.
So that's certainly going to probably eat up an entire day on the eastern neighborhood of University Circle in Little Italy. For those going back to their hotel in downtown and looking for a place to eat, would recommend Asia Town, which is right in, we call it Midtown. So it's right between University Circle and downtown. And Asia Town is not just a Chinatown. It's not just a Koreatown like Los Angeles, but it has a diverse Asian population. So we have Korean residents, we have Thai residents, Vietnamese, Hong Kong, Chinese, and there's plenty of good restaurants. I've consistently heard visitors from out of town saying it's some of the best Vietnamese they've eaten at. I personally like Superior Pho for Vietnamese. Li Hua has some of the best dim sum in the city. And then if you like a unique dessert, Bao Bao Waffle is a Hong Kong inspired waffle store in Asia Town. Very fun and good bite. So would definitely recommend Asia Town. Not too much. I mean, it's not going to be like your traditional coastal Chinatown or Asia Town where it's very dense. It's very Midwestern in that the housing is spaced out and you're going to have two or three streets of restaurants, and many of them are very worth going into.
Okay.
For your audience, I would say day three, you're going to then want to spend some time on the west side, the western neighborhoods of Cleveland. So right across the Cuyahoga River, where you're staying in downtown, the neighborhoods are called Tremont, Ohio City, and Gordon Square are the three primary neighborhoods where you're probably going to want to spend your time. There's a lot of great food. There's fun activities. It's definitely worth a visit. So you could, if you're staying at the Ohio City Hostel or in Ohio City, everything's walkable. If you're staying downtown, again, just a short train ride or a walk or an Uber ride, would start with brunch in Tremont at a place called Lucky's Cafe. It's really an urban garden. They grow a lot of their own food right outside of the restaurant. In wintertime, obviously, they got to bundle that up with a greenhouse, but it's a delicious farm-to-table brunch place. And in Tremont, it's an old Eastern European neighborhood. So a lot of the immigrants who came over and they were on this side of the river, they weren't the rich industrial barons that a lot of downtown Cleveland and into the Heights had as residents. But they were a lot of immigrants that were working wages and they definitely lived a different lifestyle. But with that came just modest but adorable housing. Very dense housing, and it's a great neighborhood to walk around. And for those movie fans out there, the Church St. Theodosius is a legendary Russian Orthodox church that was in the film Deer Hunter. And that's right in Tremont. It's got onion bulb domes. Yep, it's a great photo op. The main thing in Tremont that people visit will be the Christmas Story House. Now, the fans of the movie Christmas Story seem to be all over the world, and they come to Cleveland to visit this house. In the last 15 years, the house that was used in the filming was purchased by think a guy and his wife from San Diego, and they've converted it not only into a house to visit, but you could actually stay there for the night. And it's been restored to its original structure for the movie. So as you visit it, you can climb under the sink and do everything that the characters in the movie did. So a lot of people love it. There's an annual run in December, a Christmas Story run for those who like to run races. And there's a gift shop attached to it as well. So that's a fun experience for those who are fans of that movie. For those looking for a really good dinner in Tremont, would recommend a place called Dante. Dante Bucuzzi is probably one of our top chefs here in Cleveland. He was a personal chef for Robert De Niro and Giorgio Armani and studied under Nobu. So he's been around the world cooking, came back home where he was raised, and it's a phenomenal meal. He actually studied and trained in Japan as well, has an attached sushi bar next door to his staple anchor restaurant. So if you're interested in a delicious Italian meal in an old bank in the Tremont neighborhood, definitely go to Dante. If you would like some delicious sushi and more of a Pacific Rim experience, you could go downstairs to Ginkgo.
Got it.
Those also, once you leave Tremont, you can walk to Ohio City. It's an adjacent neighborhood. Where you're going to start there is the West Side Market. Now, this is 109 years old. It's a public market, and it's been running steadily for well over a century. There are vendors in there who sell anything from prepared foods to butcher shops to produce. And these are businesses that have been handed down through generation after generation in their family. So there's a real authenticity about this city market. You could get a great bite there. You could get some groceries and take them back to your hotel room. But it's a pretty fascinating structure, and it's a great place to go up to the second level with a piro or a crepe and a cup of coffee and just people watch. There's always a lot of activity at the West Side Market. Ohio City is also the home to several of our local breweries. So if you have beer fans in the audience, Great Lakes Brewing Company is the OG of breweries, not only in Cleveland, but in America. It's been around since 1988. There's certainly a great experience with grabbing a beer there. If you sit at the bar, before it was Great Lakes Brewing, this is a place that Elliot Ness used to, legend has it, that Elliot Ness used to go here for his post-work libation and was shot at during that, one of his days of enjoying a beer. And that bullet hole is still in the bar, and they have it marked. So yeah, it's a neat place to grab a beer. The Christmas Ale is probably one of its notable beers, and we'll get into that later. But there's also Market Garden Brewery, which is adjacent to the West Side Market with an outstanding patio, fire pits if you're here in a colder month to just grab a drink. Would also focus on the Hingetown part of Ohio City, which is a sub-neighborhood. It kind of reminds me of Wynwood in Miami. It's a very colorful part of Cleveland. There's murals everywhere. There's like vegetation growing on the sides of restaurants and walls intentionally. It actually looks good. And it's just a neat place to grab something to eat, a tea, and walk around. There's an annex from the Cleveland Museum of Art in this part of town called the Transformer Station. Much more modern and abstract art, but certainly could spend some time in there in Hingetown. Would also encourage your guests to eat at a place called Larder in Hingetown. It is a modern take on an old-time Jewish deli. Phenomenal food. James Beard, nominated chef, and he consistently changes his menu and has wonderful food in there. So would certainly recommend that.
Okay.
A little further, about a mile away west of downtown from Hingetown, is the Gordon Square Arts District. And this neighborhood abuts the lakefront, Edgewater State Park, which is a wonderful place to go and enjoy. And wait for it, it's a beach in Cleveland, Ohio. It's a very nice beach, by the way. And it's also probably a couple miles of green space as well. So for those who just like to stroll and walk, Edgewater Park is a good, probably one of the top green space or public spaces in the state of Ohio, if not the Midwest. There's a bathhouse there, and it actually has a bar, and it's just a neat place to hang out. In Gordon Square proper, they call it the Arts District because there's about three or four different theaters, and they're different type of theater that takes place. So there's an old school renovated movie theater from 100 years ago. called the Capitol Theater, so you could catch any modern movie that's out in the circuit. There's also a Near West Theater, which is live performance, as well as the Cleveland Public Theater, which, again, is more abstract or unique performance. But it's a great way to spend an evening and take in some a meal as well and have a date night if you're out with a significant other or stand alone as well. One of my favorite places in Gordon Square is called Brew Nuts. It is a donut shop. They incorporate beer into their recipes for their donuts. And
okay.
Yes, and it's very tasty. The beer brings an interesting flavor and texture to the donut. They consistently rotate their menu.
Now, do you have to be a beer fan or can you just be a donut fan to enjoy it?
You can just be a donut fan. Depends on the donut that you're eating. Some, it's hard to detect, but it's a delicious bite. It's whimsical, colorful food, and a definitely a unique experience, especially for those donut fans.
Okay.
I failed to mention in Edgewater Park, there's stand-up paddleboard rental, kayak, there's yoga in the park. There's a giant willow tree that is right snug up against the lake, and it's kind of an iconic tree in the city of Cleveland. A great place to sit, take photos, and watch the sunset. The sunsets over Lake Erie are pretty phenomenal. If you look at the geography of the city, it juts in a little bit, so we have a clear view to the west. And the months of probably April through September, October offer beautiful sunsets over the lake. Yeah, you certainly could spend an entire day there. I would say the fourth day, there's different activities within the city that you can enjoy, such as the Cleveland Metro Parks Zoo. It's a phenomenal. Anything run by the Cleveland Metro Parks is very well run. There's neat exhibits there. Don't need to get into a zoo. I'm sure plenty of your guests know zoos. There's also a Cleveland Aquarium, which is on the west bank of the Flats neighborhood. We haven't really talked much about the Flats. I think a lot of people who knew Cleveland probably in the 70s or 80s thought Flats. It went through a downspin. It's back into a more vibrant place, but it's mostly restaurants and there's not a ton of shopping down there. It's a great place to go enjoy happy hour, sunset, whatever. But there is an aquarium on the west bank and it's pretty unique. They have this tube that you walk through. And it is, when you walk through the tube, there's literally just sharks swimming all around you. And it's kind of a unique take on an aquarium. I think there's another one that looks like this maybe in Australia, but it's certainly not your Baltimore or your Atlanta aquarium. It's a unique experience.
In terms of a shark tube, I've actually done it at a couple different aquariums.
Okay. All right. That's fine. I thought it was unique. Apparently it's not. So.
That's all right.
Okay. And there's also some specialized exhibits with the Great Lakes fish and species that live throughout the Great Lakes. So certainly worth your time if you have kids or if you're into fish. I would say my next stop, and I heard your guests from Pittsburgh claim this, but the Cuyahoga Valley National Park, I love Pittsburgh, but yeah, that is something they would do claim this. But Cuyahoga Valley National Park is phenomenal green space for anyone visiting Northeast Ohio. It is a national park. It's one of the newer national parks that got the designation probably within the last couple decades. The Buckeye Trail runs through there, which is a 1,400-mile loop that goes through all of the state of Ohio. So those who are into hiking, certainly not the Appalachian Trail, but those who bring their tents and like week-long journeys, the Buckeye Trail, you could pick up at the Cuyahoga Valley National Park. One of my favorite spots there is called Blue Hen Falls, which is a lovely waterfall. It's part of a hike that you could take. It's a destination for a hike. It's just a simple waterfall. It's not going to be like anything massive, but there's a lot of beauty in the sounds and that it offers in nature is pretty unique. Brandywine Falls is a larger waterfall offered in Cuyahoga Valley National Park, also a destination as part of a hike. Would also recommend to your audience the Ledges Overlook. When I hike the ledges, it doesn't necessarily feel like somewhere in Ohio. It's very craggy, high, unique rock structures and formations. But it's pretty special. It's very cavernous at times. It's a pretty cool hike.
Okay.
In the wintertime, there are skiing hills in Cuyahoga Valley National Park. Boston Hills and Brandywine offers skiing. It's not going to be your Black Diamond skiing, but certainly if you're in town and you enjoy skiing, and unfortunately you make it here in wintertime, skiing is available at Cuyahoga Valley National Park. And as I mentioned, Boston Music Center is where Cleveland Orchestra takes up residency in the summer.
Right.
Phenomenal place to grab a concert. Or if you are here in the summer, definitely check out Cleveland Orchestra to listen to them. Bring charcuterie, wine, whatever you need. Sit on a blanket and just kind of look at the stars and enjoy the music. So the final piece of the Cuyahoga Valley National Park I'd like to touch on is called the Towpath. This is a, it's got to be, they keep expanding it. So sorry if I'm wrong on the mileage. It's got to be close to 80 miles now. It goes from Lake Erie all the way to well south of Canton. And it runs through the Cuyahoga Valley National Park. The naming behind Towpath is that it was a path that runs along the Erie Canal, and mules would tow the boats from some of the small towns along the canal up to Lake Erie. And that path still exists where folks love to bike and hike and walk and run. And it's definitely a draw for those who are active in nature.
Well, and we should say that the towpath runs all the way down to Akron now is what I'm seeing. And if you're down near Akron, there is the town of Wadsworth near Akron, where another famous Ohio son was born. And you know who that is?
The basketball player.
No, that was me, but good guess.
Gotcha. You too. Yeah, absolutely. What town were you from?
I was born in Wadsworth, Ohio, but I moved away when I was very young.
And I heard you were living in Salinas, right?
Correct, in California.
Gotcha. And I've been there too, over near Monterey. Yeah, it's a great park.
Exactly.
Yeah, excellent. Great. And I will just draw your audience attention to just a couple other one-off experiences. So the Cleveland International Film Festival, also known as CIFF, C-I-F-F, is every March or April. It's a phenomenal event. It usually runs a week and a half, brings in independent films from all over the world, draws just tons of guests. It's the hub is downtown, but they show the independent films throughout some of the more unique theaters across the city, like the Capitol Theater I mentioned earlier, or the Cedar Lee Theater in Cleveland Heights. For those who are fans of comics, Cleveland is the birthplace of Superman.
I did not know that.
Yeah, Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster developed him in the Glenville neighborhood. The Glenville neighborhood is, there's not too much going on there. There is a house dedicated to the birthplace of Superman, so I guess if that is important to you, it's probably worth seeing. Otherwise, I would say skip.
Okay.
The Karamu House is one of the oldest, if not the oldest, African-American theaters in the country. That is also here in Cleveland. So for those in the arts and mostly the civil rights movement as well, the importance of that theater, it stood the test of time and continues to be a draw for many visitors and residents here. As far as cuisine goes in Cleveland, we touched on some of the restaurants that I would recommend as you're going through neighborhoods. But some of the things that are different to Cleveland or some of our staple foods would, there's a lot of Eastern European influence, just generations of grandmas passing recipes down. So you'll see a lot of Eastern European meats and sausages. The Polish boy is a staple Cleveland food. And so this is going to be a sausage that is on a bun with fries on the bun and barbecue sauce. It sounds kind of weird. It's not my favorite, but certainly something that is unique to Cleveland. Pierogies are a big part of many menus in Cleveland, obviously a Polish staple. Mm-hmm. It's a potato and cheese filled dumpling, essentially. A Cleveland clam bake, believe it or not, is a very Cleveland behind Boston and New England in that area. Cleveland has the second most number of clam bakes annually in the fall. It is
really?
Yes. The people of New England cannot understand why they're shipping so many clams to Cleveland.
That was, of course, the next question is Lake Erie specifically known for a lot of clams and not that I was aware of?
No, but I think, and actually your other guest did touch on this, just the history of the settlement of the Western Reserve from Connecticut, a lot of people. And just ironically, that tradition of clam bakes has stood the test of time. Every fall, you'll see it on every restaurant's menu. People have clam bakes in their backyards. Different restaurants have different, more modern takes on clam bakes. So again, if you come here in October or September, you're going to see fun, unique takes of the clam bake on menus. So yeah, the Cleveland-style clam bake. Michael Simon, who is an Iron Chef from Cleveland, has a couple restaurants here. He's actually opened a barbecue joint in downtown Cleveland that he coins Cleveland barbecue. Now, many of your guests are going to be like, no, you can't say that. It's Memphis, it's Kansas City. But he's created his own sauce using local Ohio ingredients. So he uses Burtman's ballpark mustard in the barbecue sauce, local Ohio maple syrup. It's a different flavor. And the meats that he smokes are some of those Eastern European meats. So it's a very Cleveland take on barbecue, and it's a phenomenal meal. If you're downtown, certainly go to Mabel's Barbecue. And again, it's Michael Simon's staple restaurant.
I think that in general, as a big barbecue fan, I love the rivalry because there are very few barbecue styles in the U.S. that I don't like.
Yeah.
Except for the white sauce. Sorry, North Carolina, but that's the only one that just doesn't work for me at all. But
I would agree with that. But this one's mostly mustard based. He does a great job with the meats. He spent a lot of time in Texas and working with pit masters to really understand how to best smoke meats. And then he essentially created a barbecue sauce using Cleveland flavors. So definitely worth your time. I would say day trips, if you are interested in getting out of town, Mohican Tree Houses. Mohican is a state park. It's probably an hour and a half south of Cleveland. They have a fun treehouse setting for people who want to stay overnight. Very fun experience. Could spend a night there, and a lot of hiking that could be done down in Mohican State Park. Amish country, again, that's probably only about an hour and a half south of Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
Very in Berlin, Ohio area. Different shops, different cuisine, very neat carpentry that takes place down there. So if you just want to walk around and get a different experience, Amish country is not far away. Your previous guest did mention the islands and Cedar Point. I don't want to get into that. I would say if you're going to take a vacation with the goal of getting to an island to go to Key West or the Outer Banks or somewhere, the locals go up here because it's close. I wouldn't say it's worth getting on a plane to come to the Lake Erie Islands. They are fun. And then the Grand River Valley is home to many wineries, believe it or not. It's about an hour east of Cleveland, starting to get into some of the foothills of the Alleghenies. And there's Geneva, Ohio, which has probably maybe somewhere between 10 and 12 wineries. M Cellars, M is the letter in the alphabet. That's my personal favorite. They make some great wines. And you could stay at Geneva on the Lake, which is a state park on Lake Erie, to enjoy a night or two.
Okay. How about things to skip? You mentioned Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. If you're not a big music fan, skip it. If you are, certainly do it. Are there other things that you glossed over?
Yeah. Again, I would go back to the islands and Cedar Point are very crowded. And a lot of people come down from Michigan and from all over the Midwest for that. And I don't personally like crowds. So I would say if you want a party, that's great. But if you think it's going to be a different experience, you could probably skip Sandusky, and the tourism bureau out there will probably not like me saying that. But I would say there's other fun experiences, again, if you don't like crowds. So,
okay. I'm going to resurrect an old question I used to ask on the show is, you really know you're in Cleveland when what?
So one thing about Cleveland and Clevelanders is we love our tradition and we love what is ours, like things that are uniquely Cleveland. And I could give you the cliche, you know, you're in Cleveland when it's 70 degrees one day and it snows the next. But that's for a lot of cities.
Right.
The thing that I think is uniquely Cleveland revolves around tradition. And there's a day in October, Great Lakes Brewing, as I mentioned, they release their Christmas ale, which people all over the coasts that have left Cleveland or maybe come back to Cleveland, and they have these beers delivered to them all over. And they distribute out in a lot of these states, but not every state. The Great Lakes Christmas Ale has what's called their first pour, and it's like on a Thursday afternoon in October, and it seems like the whole city just stops working, and they dress up as Santa, and they go down to Great Lakes Brewing, and everybody wants to be at first pour. It's comical, and it's
funny.
But it's a very Cleveland thing because it's, again, it's a tradition, and they're celebrating something that they're proud of. So
excellent. You're standing in the prettiest spot in Cleveland. Where are you standing? What are you looking at?
We didn't talk about this, but I would go to the Solstice Steps. The Solstice Steps. It's in Lakewood Park. It's Lakewood is a very densely populated community of Cleveland, and it only has about maybe 3/4 of a mile of public lakefront space. And it's probably got about 4 or 5 miles of total lakefront space. So they needed to figure out how to best use that space. And they created what was called the Solstice Steps. It is a stunning cliff right over Lake Erie, and it aligns with the summer solstice. So there's some architecture taking place here. I'm not an architect, so I can't really explain it that well. But when you hit summer solstice, the sun like goes right over where all the steps are pointed and are aligned. But you could go there any day of the year, well, in the nice weather months, for a beautiful sunset. It is an outstanding view of the lake. Great place to enjoy coffee. Great place to enjoy a glass of wine in a paper cup. Or it's a beautiful view, the Solstice Steps.
And one thing that makes you laugh and say only in Cleveland, besides first pour, which I think that
Yeah, I would say we have a history of potholes in this town, and you will have your car needed to be fixed annually. So that is funny because we joke about it a lot. It's not funny when you have a couple $100 bill for your car, but it's just an old city. It's not the most financially sound city. So projects for infrastructure tend to get in a queue and sometimes take time. So we laugh about that a lot here. And I don't know if that exists in other cities or not. So
I think a few other cities have that problem too.
Okay. Maybe we're hard on ourselves then. So
excellent. And if you had to summarize Cleveland in 3 words, what 3 words are you going to use?
Yeah, I would say it's a surprising city. I think it's a delicious city. And I think it's a unique city. I think Cleveland's a city that will exceed your expectations. So if that's your goal, I think it'll deliver for you.
Excellent. Our guest again is Daniel Carciopolo. And Daniel, thanks so much for coming on Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your love for your hometown of Cleveland.
Great. Thank you so much, Chris.
As always, a special thanks go out to the patrons of the show who help support the show financially and underwrite some of the costs of putting together the Amateur Traveler. If you would like to be a patron of the show, you can get a ad-free version of the show a little earlier than other people get the show, as well as getting together on a monthly Zoom call. If you're interested, go to patreon.com/amateurtraveler. I heard this week from Simon about the recent show we did on Western Georgia, that is the country of Georgia, and Simon said, I so enjoyed your recent discussion on Western Georgia. My wife and I stopped for a night in Batumi in 2014 as a part of our epic overland, mostly, trip from the UK to Australia, and your podcast guest showed us just how much we missed. I wished we'd had her 36 things to do in Batumi article, because all we really did was go for a paddle on a stony Black Sea beach, look at casinos from the outside only, wondering how many people were inside, and speculate on the spanking new Trump Tower that was being built in the middle of Batumi at the time. He pulled the plug shortly after his election in 2016, I think, so I imagine the Trump Tower signage is long gone now. Looks like we have to go back one day and try some of Emily's ideas. Thanks again for the great interview, Simon. Well, thanks so much, Simon. Always great to get feedback. With that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. I am off next week, so we will have the next week's show will be a repeat, and then I will be back again, hopefully, although that show may come out a day late as I will be traveling. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And thanks so much for listening.